Hello and welcome to episode 27 of Chips of Chorlton. I'm Neil Wright. I am joined by Duncan.
Who's counting?
Who's counting? Duncan and Andy.
Hello.
From the band Dutch Uncles. And we are mixing it up a little bit, aren't we?
Well, we're taking it right back to where we all began.
Yeah, we're in
back in your living room because the self-love dungeon is at freezing
point. It's too cold.
Stop calling. My parents listen to this. My wife listens to this.
You joked about it.
Oh, I suppose. Maybe I've made
it's
a
just a joke.
We'll just bleep it out.
It's just
it's all speculation, my friend.
All speculation. So
speculation.
So what we're doing this week is this more professional approach, actually doing an interview and then doing a little podcast around the interview? I don't know.
Well, that's an interesting point.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea is very sound on the outside of it. We go to Sunderland and interview two people or bands that we respect and have a lot to say about music and society and knock them out, so to speak, in a weekend. But it obviously also involved us having a lovely time and a lovely night out in Sunderland.
It did, didn't
so
it?
So everybody won. The listeners won, we won, and
my set list of talking points definitely didn't win.
No, I
thought we were going to have much more of a plan of, all right, so we're going to sit down at this place and we're going to have these things to talk about, and it's going to be like this, and this is how it's going to work. And then as soon as we get to the record shop at Pop Rex, it's full of a crocheting club, which I know how to say now. Well, have I said that right?
Yeah, crochet, you said crotchet. Yeah.
I said crotchet. I do say crotchet in this interview. I was like, what? It's crocheting.
Yeah. So this first part of our Sunderland North East trip, we went to visit Frankie and the Heartstrings at their fantastic record shop, Pop Rex. So for the listeners, I suppose the best question is, or the first question is, why do we go to Sunderland?
Why have we gone there?
Yeah.
Working backwards from where we are right now in your living room, I'd say the first point is that Frankie himself has always been a very prolific supporter of the podcast ever since it started. He's always had... it's always nice to get, you know, people within the industry who you know are involved in the conversation to actually get them on board. And this is something we've been trying to get done for about a year. Now, further to that, we do have a sort of... quite a strong connection with Sunderland as a band ourselves. Yeah. I mean, we've known Frankie and the Heartstrings from the very beginning, from our very beginning and their very beginning. And we met them through Barry Hyde from the Futureheads, who we met through the Dan and Anna Aykroyd tour, which was the very first UK tour that we went on back in 2009.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, we had toured before then, but...
Well, I mean...
Well, we don't talk about that.
I mean, this felt like actually playing music rather than, just nine stag do's.
Oh, no. Yeah, this was... You say nine stag do's. I think even that's flattering.
I'm thinking about Germany in particular. Where I'm getting the stag do vibe from.
I mean, well, yeah, and when you're saying about the stag do vibe, I mean, when it comes to walking into a venue in Leeds, looking at the stage and then walking straight out, I've definitely done that at a stag do. However, I don't think I've had to argue with the promoter to give us money for gigs. I don't think that's happened at stag do's. Yeah. And if it has, it's been very clandestine and probably illegal, and I probably wasn't involved.
But we met Frank, as we'll go into it in the interview as well. We met Frankie touring with the Futureheads off the back of a recommendation from Dan and Anna Aykroyd. And in this, I was looking at some pictures of that tour the other day. Pete has an album on it on Facebook. As we'll go into in the interview, it was a very, warm tour full of sort of like-minded Northerners, which certainly created a vibe.
Well, yeah. And I suppose our very picture of Sunderland has always been a very romantic one, from the fact that one of our very first bands who we were really influenced by when we started Dutch Uncles was Field Music, now our label mates. And then, of course, we heard so much about it from Barry himself whilst we were touring with the Futureheads and meeting Frank in the Heartstrings. And then we finally got there when we played Split Festival with them all at Ashbrook Cricket Ground back in, what year was that? Can you remember? 2010?
We were talking about this, 2010 maybe.
Or maybe it was the back end of 2009. Actually, no, it must be. It must be 2010. Yeah. It was after the Futureheads tour. Forgive me. So and that was all fantastic. And then after that gig, I just remember thinking, like, I cannot wait to go back to Sunderland. It almost felt like a spiritual home. And then as soon as we book another tour of our own, it's like, Sunderland's got to be in there. Don't care about Newcastle. We're doing Sunderland. We're going alternative on this. And boy, did we go alternative. We found a place called the Cosa Nostra. There's a reason why you won't find a music venue called the Cosa Nostra, because it's a fucking restaurant.
Yeah, we basically played in the cask room.
Yeah, we played in the cask room. And we showed up and we'd brought our friends, young British artists, all the way up from Manchester with us to support us. Like, oh, don't you worry, guys. I know Nottingham went a bit south before, but it's all going to come around with Sunderland, mate. Everyone's on the guest list. Don't you worry. No one was on the guest list. And yeah, basically we got there to this restaurant. It was like, well, it may be a restaurant, but don't worry, the guest list's going to be there. It's going to be a good time. And it's like, where's the sound engineer? And then the chef just walks out.
Don't worry, lads.
But when he's got both hands, he's got his head in both hands as well during the sound check. And then our manager's coming up to you, Andy, like, Andy, could you give the sound desk a look? Everything's already running 2 hours behind and no one's rung up about the guest list. She's thinking, oh, this might not be the spirit of my first thought.
I think maybe at the time our manager possibly did say this. He might have said that, yeah, but like mixing, it's a bit like cooking, isn't it? You've got all the raw ingredients, you've got the drums, you've got the bass, and then you mix them all together for a lovely end product.
Yeah, and your EQ's like, the pepper.
No, I think that was just, blindly optimistic.
Yeah. But we kept going back, we kept trying. We played the Independent a couple of times, and it's no longer there, and we still are, so we won.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and I think that's all there is to be said about that.
Yeah.
Although, actually, sorry, just to put it back into context with the interview itself, the shows we did at Pop Rex, we did two of them, have both been great moments to actually play to the music-loving community of Sunderland, and it's very passionate.
You see, actually, they've probably been by far the best gigs in Sunderland.
Without doubt.
When we've probably had a bit of time to sell the idea of a show in a record store, given it a few months, and I think maybe, possibly the second one, there were like, hundreds in there at the time, and it was fantastic. It was brilliant.
Yeah, the record sales through the roof at that place.
Yeah, well, so
incomprehensibly so.
Yeah.
But it ain't postal votes. You know, there's no worries there.
Bye. So here's our interview with Frankie and Dave. Oh, Dave.
Oh my God, yes.
Dave.
We should say, so two members of Frankie and the Heartstrings are with us. We have Frankie Francis, we also have Dave Harper.
Yeah.
And just a disclaimer, if you think he is mad as a bag of cats, he can be, but I've also heard his Radio 4 voice. He is definitely all with it.
Yeah.
And if you hear me congratulate him on the wank, on his wank anniversary, which I believe I do sincerely, that's just testament to how loud the room was and how little control I certainly felt we had at the time, which is why I was very quiet in this interview. But when you got Dave on the mic, that's all you need.
I think it's an absolute treasure.
I think us listening back to this will discover some one-liners that we maybe didn't hear, were sort of like snuck in there, because he is the king of them.
He's
pretty much 20 seconds,
he is a genius.
He'll give you a one-liner.
Somewhere in the world, the greatest pub quiz is missing its host, and it's Dave.
So yeah, so here is our interview at Pop Rex with Frankie and Dave.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us on our podcast, lads.
I'm genuinely a big fan of the podcast.
I've never heard it.
So there we go.
I was going to ask you specifically, Dave. I thought you might like it.
Loads of podcasts, just not this one.
Okay. Purposely.
I listen to the crime
ones. Possibly every other one.
The crime podcasts.
The crime ones, the sport ones, the funny ones.
Wacky ones.
This one's funny.
Eh?
We're funny, aren't we? Are we funny?
I don't know. I'm not sure what our genre is anymore.
Are we subculture wonky? Or are we just self-deprecating?
Just general. Great British humour.
Goes into crime as well.
Grime.
Does it?
Grime,
I'm more into progressive shit step myself, but it's like a bit of trap.
So you guys know each other from touring back in the day, don't you?
Yeah.
So what tour was it that you were on together?
It was our first proper tour. We met them on the Futureheads tour.
It was pretty much our first proper tour as well, I think. Yeah, so the Futureheads support slot. What year was this? 2010?
Yeah. Yeah.
2010? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it was 2010. Yeah, it was. It was the Futureheads tour for their fourth album, wasn't it? For Jupiter.
Yeah. The Chaos.
The Chaos, sorry.
Yeah. But that was the track on the album.
Yeah, it was close enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's fine. David Hyde's left the shop now. It's okay. he was here before. He didn't hear.
I don't remember a lot of that.
So did you
I don't.
Before you met each other, did you know each other's music?
I've been to see Dutch Uncles before.
Had you?
Yeah. I saw you at the End Bar.
The what?
The End Bar.
Really?
Yeah.
All those great memories of those gigs, yeah.
Yeah.
I was at that one where you had a keyboard player who had a see-through combat top on and a cap. I can remember.
Was that Johnny?
Yeah.
Oh, it was
words.
And it was with Dan and Anna and Aykroyd?
Yeah, it was with Dan and Anna and Aykroyd. I forgot that Johnny came with us on that tour.
Yeah, I drove you for that tour.
Did you?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, was it? I thought you never drove us again after the Bombay tour.
No, I don't know which one was.
You two
did you do it?
Wow!
No one tours there.
That's amazing. Bloody.
It was 2010.
Okay.
It was the Futureheads tour, and I remember So it was your first tour.
Yeah, we everything happened really, really fast for Frank at the Hastings.
Not me. I was 33.
Yeah. No.
Just dragged along for me. Sick of it.
But I mean, I'd never been in a band before Frank and the Heartstrings, and I thought that what was happening was pretty normal until Dave would often remind me, I think something might be happening, this is not normal. Well, it's perfectly normal, right? You do two gigs, you get signed, whatever. You tour the world for a few years.
So in that sense, take us through Frank and the Heartstrings getting together then, just for the sake of the listeners on this.
Oh, you groaned like you've got to do the story again now.
No, chat it up. The truth is, I'd left university, ended up running a bar in Sunderland.
It's like Love Line.
Which was a bit of like a venue as well. Yeah, it's called The White Room. We knew each other from, Sunderland essentially is quite a small city centre.
Yeah.
And if a gig goes on, normally it's the same people going to those gigs.
Before podcasts, we used to just talk.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel right with that.
So we all knew each other.
Podcast we were doing, just having a chat.
Yeah, we all knew each other. Dave and Michael came in one night when I was working at this bar, and we started speaking about music we were into. And at that time, we were speaking about Orange Juice, Dexys Midnight Runners, stuff, Smiths, just stuff like that, and said, wouldn't it be great if a band from Sunderland sounded a bit like that? And then we decided to...
Still think that, really.
We still think that, And we genuinely just went up the next couple of days, or a few days later, went upstairs to the empty function room in this pub, started playing... I was playing bass initially. Never played bass in my life, really, so that didn't really work out. We had a guy called Grassy who couldn't make the rehearsals as a drummer because he was busy. We went downstairs to get a drink. He was in the bar.
And the one time he did drum, he fell off. His stool dropped down.
You know when your stool drops?
Yeah.
His stool was broken, so every time he drummed, by the end of the song, he was playing it like a kid.
You know, like the Hamlet adverts when he keeps going down in the photo booth. It was like that, and then he just
I kind of want that
in.
To happen at the same time as like the kick drum moving away from him when you've got no rope.
Oh, yeah, I love that. Absolutely love that.
So then we got the lineup together. It was essentially four of us. Michael, who's not on the podcast, Dennis came in on bass. I was pushed to sing, and we went for
that. Was considered the short straw at the time, wasn't it?
It was,
We had a fairly similar sort of agreement. Essentially, I was a drummer. And you were by far the better drummer, Andy.
And so by far the shitter singer.
Well, I only volunteered to sing because I'd done musical theatre before.
You'd been in Annie.
Yeah, I'd been
in
Annie. That was it. Yeah, that was my qualification. CV. Well, I was President Roosevelt in Annie, so I guess I can be the frontman then.
We've all been in Annie.
It's like that's
how you start a band. Yeah. Classes.
Exactly.
It's that logical progression from musical theatre to indie pop.
Well, I suppose I don't know whether it's a northern thing, you know, for northern musicians to feel it, but it is. There is a weird boisterous to say, well, I'll be the front man, I'll be the singer. It's what I do. You know what I mean? I think you have to kind of take it as it.
I didn't do that. And then,
exactly. Like, I think we shy away from that way of thinking about it.
The best looking.
Someone's got.
And I didn't want to get involved in the conversation, so you've got that. You know.
And yeah, I can see you now just pouting at the air there, Dave.
But it all happened. Really, really fast. We started working with a guy called Pete Gofton, who just ended up recording with, really. And then ended up, because of the way we recorded it, he ended up having to play his parts on guitar. And then he just kind of like accidentally was in the band. And then we did a few gigs up here. There was a bit of talk. And for some reason, that talk meant a lot of the industry came up and see us play in Newcastle. And then And then things
that's
just
quite
unheard
really of, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
like, you know, if you got industry coming that far up,
do you think part of that was because there was a sort of like a scene already there with like Field Music and Future Heads?
The Future Heads definitely helped.
Yeah,
I think
100%.
It had more to do with the fact that Pete Gofton had someone from Wichita's email address.
Right,
he can romanticise as much as one, but I never met these guys. They had.
Yeah, but, you know? But there was a case. There was a time when I went to see Andy Weatherall DJing, and we just recorded our first ever recordings.
Yeah,
with Pete in his garage. And I want to say Andy Weatherall DJing, techno night ran by some DJs called Ward 10 in Sunderland. And I knew Andy's past, obviously, being a great music producer, but now he's like, you know, he's a well-renowned DJ as well. And I just thought I'd take him. He had a show on Six Music at the time. I just thought I'd take him a CD demo, and I hoped for the chance to just be like handed to him. I ended up speaking to him for a few hours afterwards, and you know, just speaking about music, genuinely just talking about music.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the night, I was just like, oh, and by the way, I was hoping to give you this tonight. It's my, you know, we're in a band. We just made this today. Never thought I've got my numbers on the top. Or was it Pete's number was on the top?
It's my number?
It was your number.
well, if it wasn't, he managed to ring me and I thought,
well, I don't know why I would put, but that's definitely true because it wasn't my number. But
they were the only numbers you knew were mine, so.
Yeah, so I put your number on a demo CD, give it to Andrew Weatherall. He then phones us up.
On the Saturday. You had my number, you dog.
Phones Dave and says, oh, I really like the demo. Dave phones us straight away and says, oh, I've just had a weird phone call from Andy Weatherall. I'm going to phone Peter Bruce. That's what it means. Get off the phone to me, then I'll phone Peter Bruce, see what he thinks about it. And what did Peter Bruce say?
Well, he put a suit with David Bruce. And then it was just like, in my head, it's like, you know, when you've
like
got
the internal call system in Sunderland.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to put a suit with David Bruce. By the time, like, after 5 or 6 weeks, we're speaking to Bono and the rest is history.
Yeah. You know? So he had his Six Music show at the time. And then he said to Dave on the phone call, I'm going to play a track from the EP on Saturday's show.
He played them all?
He played them all. Wow. He just played the full four tracks.
That's Six Music?
Yeah, he didn't know how to press pause on the CD.
Yeah. he
might be a top DJ, but he didn't have the logistics down.
And he kind of announced us as the greatest unsigned band in the UK right now.
Yeah,
I think. And then...
Wonder what he said, he asked him that no.
Yeah, exactly. And then the next week we had... On that night we had actually a show in Newcastle.
He wanted to put a single out, didn't he?
Yeah. On what was his Dirty Rotters or something? He had a label, didn't he? Or something.
Yeah,
like
it was
something like that.
Squidgy Panthers.
Yeah, something like
that. He was going to put it 9-inch out.
But then we did a show the week after the airing in Newcastle, and there was people there from Sony, Wichita, Rough Trade, and it was then it just happened really, really fast.
Yeah.
We ended up speaking to everyone, found out that we got the most pissed with Wichita, and ended up just getting stoned and speaking about bands.
Whoa, you might say that.
We were fed extremely strong weed. That is true.
All I'm saying is George Michael, same supplier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Snappy snaps.
Yeah. It's strong, seriously strong shit.
Yeah. I'd come
and then
back
we
to
ended
the future.
A record deal.
Yeah. For a quid?
Yeah.
It was mint.
Yeah. That's not a usual thing to happen.
Our story is unique.
Yeah.
We're from Sunderland. They came to Sunderland.
Yeah.
You know, that's not normal, really. How fast it happened? I don't think it is, anyway.
Yeah, no, it was rare enough that people would come up to Manchester in a sense. Like,
the only time
we can recall it is when Woo Life were doing their monthly residency and you'd start to see like all the industry coming up.
We remember like in the city happening.
Yeah.
Dave was in bands before me and I used to go around with bands like... this in Vegas were a band I used to be in the van with, essentially, while they were doing gigs in Manchester, in the city, Future Heads. And we would hope to get a gig in Manchester. People from the Northeast would hope to get a gig in Manchester.
We heard it was a new lead.
With more chance to industry being there.
Yeah.
Manchester was out of London. But you're saying there wasn't anyone there the whole time?
Never anyone there.
Yeah.
Shit. Just a guy called V-Man.
Oh, God.
Oh, we had a guy come up to see us called... Remember that first guy with the glasses and we played the worst gig we ever played?
He's still in here now.
I know he is. I'm not having a pop. He's got glasses. He just has.
Yeah. You know? But he found us on MySpace before anyone, which is really weird.
If anyone's watching, we're still on
there. Props to that for doing that.
Yeah.
That was a legitimate way of people discovering you. You would think the MySpace page has got to be on point for all these like thousands of A&R people that are just trolling through MySpace. I felt that felt more legitimate than... you know, sending your demo off. Like, that felt like we were in the sort of, you know, digital industry.
Yeah, in fact, though, like, Wichita did have days where on a Friday they would sit and laugh at the demos.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, that thought of sending a demo, and it was going to make a difference. It did at the time. Yeah. Did they have signs
and people
like
that? Didn't. The only demo we ever gave away was to Andy Weatherwell.
That's not true. Yeah. I gave one. The only one person who never got back to us with a demo was, what do you call him? I'm out of Blur, the guitar man.
Guitar man from Blur.
Graham Coxon.
Graham Coxon. Yeah. Did you send one to him?
No, I met him.
Well, you had one on you and you said, there's a demo.
Yeah, he was really rude about it, huh?
Was he?
So I never knew that. Coxon. I didn't really know that.
What did he say? Back? I thought you just like send it off in the post, like Graham Coxon, London, put it in the post box.
Yeah. I mean, it's not on, though, is it? Like, if someone give me a demo, I'd put it in the bin round the corner. Do you know what I mean?
Did he just go, no, dismiss it?
Well, I've been talking to him. I bought a ticket for his stupid gig.
Yeah.
And then, like, kind of, like, give him it. He just, like, put it in his pocket. And I said, don't, at least have a look at it, man. Do you know what I mean? I'm sure he's been in that position.
So you just had a copy of the same demo which I gave to Weatherwall, but you were going to see Coxon at a similar time and you just went, look at this.
Yeah, and I didn't like the way he looked at us either.
CDs.
I can see where that Oasis thing kicked off, to be honest.
And I'm on their side now.
If that's a wee was gone, I'd have prayed them and all.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then, first pop of tour, we ended up being the Future Heads. We obviously knew them from Sunderland. They said, they must have been looking for a first on, which, you know, I think we were taking on the tour to do. And they said, there's a great band called Dutch Uncles on the top. You were like, oh, I've seen them. And I was like, I've never seen them. And then I remember Barry saying to me, you've got to watch Dutch Uncles. And I was like, all right, okay. He's like, you've got to watch the singer. He dances around like a Noel Edmonds pervert.
What does that
mean? I don't know what it means, but I think he meant either your shirts reminding him of Noel Edmonds.
Oh, I remember thinking
and he danced like a pervert.
Does that mean like Noel Edmonds as a pervert or someone who's,
I don't know,
like a bit pervy about Noel Edmonds?
I remember watching,
I think by very nature, I think, you know.
I remember thinking we genuinely like did like the music as well. We
like he was trying to pick a 5p out of the fire. But behind him,
it's a good move. But I think the first gig we did with you might have been the Guildford, which I've never been there since or ever before.
I do remember that. Yeah, I remember meeting you all there.
Nice room.
And I remember seeing their merch they had, and I'm thinking, fucking hell, these guys have got fucking, they've got vinyl. These guys have got like a 10 inch or something.
We were selling pit sticks and blue ribbons.
We literally had nothing. We didn't even have our own instruments. We had to borrow an amp off Wichita, I think. And Michael carried his pedals on stage in a bag for life.
Yeah. Because I'm trying to think where Barry would have seen us for the first time.
At the end. Newcastle
was it with the end where you were as well, Dave?
It was I was his wingman.
Laura probably told Barry to check. Yeah, because Dan and Ann were. I don't know where they'd heard of us from, but then
we'd played with Dan and Ann Aykroyd at a festival called Eurocultured Festival.
That sounds great.
It was in the upstairs of a Revolutions bar.
Very Euro-cultured.
Very Euro-cultured.
Goes on up there, stairs up there.
Mainly shots. The image I got from that Newcastle gig is you played OCD UC, and I just remember seeing Barry going, oh, it's like so into it.
I think it's like the introduction of Jetson in particular really got him going.
Yeah. But we were genuinely like felt out of place when we first did our first night. You guys had obviously been doing some shows before. You had that weird German record deal, I think, at the time.
I think what you spoke about.
We were genuinely like, Those guys are fucking mint. Like, we listened to Steadicam the whole tour on in the van.
Yeah. We get him because we were scared of Dennis. And he kept playing us.
But we
I wanted the best of the suite, and I couldn't care less.
Yeah. We obviously love the Future, but we're just like, Dutch Uncles, fucking incredible.
Yeah.
What a privilege to be on this tour with this.
That was weird. It was completely the opposite with us. We were just a bit like, who are these guys? They've got a lot of enemy arms. A lot of enemy inches going on right now for a first tour. And there was a bit of like, I think we had a bit of an inferiority complex about the whole thing. We must have been a completely unknown quantity to you guys. Like, where the hell is this band with a weird German label?
That was basically where we were at the time. We'd released this record on this German label and it had done absolutely nothing in the UK.
I bought that one.
but then after that, it was like, okay, we're going to tour with the Future. This is great. This maybe is as good as it's going to get. Like, we weren't really at the time we weren't a new band, so we weren't really looking for anything.
Well, bizarre, really. I suppose we were much more tribal about about the subgenres within our genre of, you know, band music, indie music, I remember kind of feeling like I remember specifically thinking that we weren't going to fit together, like not so much on a bill, but like I felt like there was going to be a clash of personalities. Yeah. And then
Lego set.
Yeah, yeah, like
a bit. Duplo on your Lego.
But you saying the first gig was Guildford? Because I thought it was Coventry.
No, it was Guildford.
Coventry was definitely on the tour.
Yeah, because I just remember.
North like,
I just
will be loving this.
Remember the Coventry Casbah.
Was it not Tunbridge Wells?
Northampton Roadmenders.
That was the last one.
That
yes.
was
that
horrific,
was
and we yes. all got kicked out.
We did.
Pete
yeah.
threw a pint over a security
yes,
guard.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I think
Jeff started a fight downstairs.
Jeff started a fight. Jeff never starts fights.
He finishes them.
Yeah. Is it great when he just like sold out? You've been on part of a tour and it's the last night, and you sold the venue out, and then they literally kick you out for a club night. Yeah.
Threatened
got
with
surrounded.
Violence.
We got surrounded by bouncers, didn't we?
Yeah, and it's Northampton. Right, nothing against Northampton, but it was a shithole.
I got a feeling they tried to frame us for something.
They did for a crime we never committed. Yeah. Yeah. So ever that we've been like in the underground, if you can find us, we'll like build shit and like bomb you up and that. But I remember getting the throw up afterwards, right, we're going to get some booze. And me and Dennis, I don't know if you were there.
That was that.
We went to the house in the street, we had gunshots and went home.
We went looking for an off license. We must have gone for 3/4 an hour
bang.
In the dark. And we just heard Alsatians and loud bangs. And we're like, we're going back to the venue with no booze.
I'm quite surprised, correct me if I'm wrong, but we've not actually played together since that tour, have we? And that was like nearly 10 years ago.
Have we not been on any festival bills or anything?
Festival bills, I think, as Dave's offspring and wife walk into the room here at Pop Rex. Yeah. Festival bills.
Started a hell of a joke there, isn't it? Yeah.
I think we might have played a festival. Well, we certainly played Reading and Leeds same weekends, but probably missed each other because you've got to do that whole thing of driving to the Reading or Leeds.
Tell us about it.
I definitely think we've been at Stockton Calling, I think, when you first started playing Slave to the Rhythm, or whatever your version was called.
Yeah.
But then there's just been this kind of tradition, if you play the North East, we come and see you.
Yeah.
We go to Manchester for a gig, you come and see us.
Yeah. That's about right.
So I feel like we've seen each other regularly, but we obviously haven't played this show for a long time.
And we played Split Festival together. Yeah. That was like, you know,
and we've gone from never seeing each other to basically spending every weekend together for years, you know.
But I think you know, that probably says something about bands of that, you know, who came out around that time, similar kind of ethos in an industry where we were both on similar indies.
If you had a new record coming out, we'd be messaging each other about it.
Yeah.
Or as they call it now, WhatsApp. I don't know if you had a go of that. It's like the Nintendo Switch of messaging.
I think we exist in the same universe.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
That's almost certainly true, Frank.
Well, you know, I mean, like, you know, I'm working on a digital radio station. Duncan does his DJ. It's quite a lot of parallels.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But so, like, to go back to that tour as well, I think, like, because we were sort of unknown quantities to each other, there was, like, as soon as we spoke to you, there was this sort of, like, northern cohesion about the tour.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And, I mean, it is probably to do with that.
It's a hell of a band.
You know what? You remember
no one was an arsehole. Do you know what I mean?
The best thing, the best tours are the ones you feel like you're on, like, to use
beeper,
but you just feel like you're on a lad's holiday for 2 weeks.
Yeah. And I'd never been on a lad's holiday.
And every night was a night out. And there's the best tours.
Yeah.
In a sense, we've always like when we've met, like, what do the kids call it? An arsehole.
Yes.
like we've went, oh, and it's been really weird because like we didn't early doors.
No.
I mean, we might have been the arseholes.
People might have thought we were the arseholes.
But like we didn't know, did we? Like me, Peter, we go, oh god, open on bumping to them again. It was all my like more lately with other bands and that. Mm. We were like, I thought it was nonsense about people and the industry being horrible. They're just disgusting. You know? It's different.
Well, in the time since we've toured, I suppose, I mean, as well as individuals having kids, the band itself has sort of had its own.
The band's had a kid.
Your band's had its own.
The Pop Rex bastard.
Right, it's a metaphor.
You've had your own bastard child. The band's had its own bastard child.
In the form of
Pop Rex.
Some curveballs, forget it.
So, what was the spark on that at first? Like, what was the first?
The spark was. Let's not like mythologize. Let's not make it better than it is. Was that our manager's idea?
Yeah.
Manager, Gareth. Well, was right, Gareth's
wait,
idea?
Because you guys had Pop Rex as a label.
Pop Sex.
Pop Sex.
Yeah, that's right.
It was much muckier.
So that was like, so Wichita said, instead of putting things out in Wichita, which still was.
You shouldn't tell your album budget or open a shop to get you in trouble.
No. And we were like, So we put a couple of singles out on Pop Sex, not just our band. We did a couple of other things as well.
I'm going to get my wife a drink.
No problem.
Yeah.
And then I think
she's ovulating.
And then the second... the second album, this time it all came about. Gareth said, why don't you just like... There was a whole time when HMV was like, HMV shutting down. It's the end of music as we know it. And he said, what about you set up a pop-up shop for a couple of weeks, get everyone you know to play.
Yeah.
And hopefully you sell a shitload of records off the back of it as well. You get the chart sales and everything's good for the second album, which we took 3 years to make with Bernard Butler, which was a bit of a mistake. We shouldn't have spent that long time on it.
Yeah, that is. But there's a lot to be said for just squeezing out an album in a couple of weeks, really, isn't there?
There is. Yeah. So anyway, we opened this shop for a couple of weeks, and it was so sensationally received by the people of Sunderland that we couldn't walk away from it.
Yeah.
Mm.
The town at the time, because it's a town, it's a city, but it's a town, was so starved of culturally.
Yeah.
That we were putting on anyone we knew. And these, you know, in some cases, pretty big artists, like world-renowned artists, like, and they were just so thankful and so, and it, we felt that we were doing such a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Dave's going to take over this conversation in a minute because what happened was we all ran it nearly all of us ran it for a year, and then we quickly realised that although it was such a sensational thing to happen to Sunderland, it's not sustainable, and Dave will go into this, but. We all had chances. Well, I had a chance to get some work through the Sunderland Football Club to work on some concerts and do some DJing. So I took that route. Here we are, five, six years down the line.
Yeah, I've had no opportunities.
but 6 years down the line, PopX still exists. It has two venues in Sunderland City Centre, essentially.
Yeah.
It has 6 years worth of, you know, the alumni... The list.
The London Eye?
No, of people who've played here, as like, you know, an academy venue would be jealous, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And the people who've been involved and spoke about the cause, it made BBC News, it's been on the in-flight magazine and on the Emirates and stuff like that. It's, you know, what's happened?
Did they get 30 seconds to sell this, you know?
Well, but Dave's going to tell you how it really runs.
The terms and conditions apply.
So this was an amazing idea, and it still is an amazing idea.
Yeah.
But it's an incredibly hard thing to pursue.
Yeah.
And it's credit to Dave and Michael that it's still here and doing it because it's a total like life dedication to make it happen. Because
there's a crotchet club. Occurring behind
crochet.
Crochet.
We say crochet in Sunderland.
Crochet now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, Dave's going to get it. Dave will tell you now about how diverse this place has to be to make ends meet. And when I say ends meet, I mean he's fucking stretching
meat.
You've got to stretch that fucking end.
I mean, I've stretch my end beyond belief just
you
to
make. See the state of his
trying end. trying to get my end to meet the other end is. Almost an impossibility. It's basically had to remove a rib to make the ends meet.
You know? Oh, or like Prince. So and Dave, what, the Spice Girls manager.
Much, well, it was Tell very us. Much like, you know, have you heard of the Wu-Tang Clan?
Yeah, it's
well,
kind of like
it that. Was like Cream, get the money, and I was all like dollar bill, y'all. And that was how it was, and here we are. You know, what happened?
Here you are with your magnum of Lambrini. I mean, congratulations.
Just for the listeners, that is actually happening.
That is true. There is actually
Dave a magnum actually of Lambrini.
I mean, I don't know what it's like. I've got a family. Yeah. Me heart packed in. I'm practically bankrupt, but I'm essentially an indie Jesus in Sunderland, so I'll take it. You know, and it's like, it's hard. We've gone from being an illegitimate, illegal business, which is folded, so no one can actually touch us for that now,
nice.
To being a legitimate community interest company who does what it has to do.
Yeah.
It's reactionary, I believe they call it. We do things when people come through the door, they tell us to do stuff, and I usually do it. Apart from the man who had one ear, I had to do him. He basically just assaulted someone, so I didn't do
it. God.
Yeah. That happened a few weeks back. Right?
I haven't heard that, so you have to tell me about that one.
I threw a woman down the stairs last year.
Did she have it coming?
Yeah, she threw hot mulled wine in someone's face.
Well,
yeah.
Jesus.
Hey, tis the season, Dave. It might happen again soon. You know?
Yeah. So, how are the record sales?
Hey?
So, how are the record sales then in the shop? Or is it...
Oh, awful. Or
Yeah.
We're not very good at it. That's the truth.
But I was... Like,
you know, Piccadilly Records is a good record shop.
Yeah.
And that's because it has, you know, a cash flow, I guess, mm-hmm. and it's able to then buy new releases.
Yeah.
And labels go to them and say, could you put this point of sale? Nice big shiny poster.
Yeah.
Any record in here has actually been begged for, borrowed or stolen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I mean,
and
yeah.
then sold on a double price.
So yeah. It's true.
Did Witcher sort of give you a load of stuff in the beginning to sell from other artists?
There was a few labels that did.
People have been really generous when Domino, you understand Wichita, what this place is.
Yeah. Rough Trade all helped out.
Well, I remember the first time we played at Pop Rex in the previous building.
That was a good one, that.
I remember you gave us all a record for our troubles on the way home.
Yeah.
I think things like kind of like classic hits of 1967. Mm. Yeah.
Some very problematic covers.
Yeah, obviously.
We had a special draw for them.
We had a guy who used to come in. We had a customer who used to come in and only, I don't think he had the internet, so he used to come in and buy those raunchy 70s covers to essentially masturbate to.
Oh my god.
Frankie.
Well, what else was he doing?
Maybe more.
This guy was weird.
He used to eat 2330 dinosaurs and come in the shop.
Not to condone it, but are we talking on premises?
Oh god, I never thought about that.
But, I mean, running a record shop, you meet the best people.
It was a big shop.
He was a big lad.
We housed an illegal immigrant for a few months.
Really?
Yeah.
He was Malaysian.
There was a girl who used to come in every Saturday with a money bag of coppers, and she'd say, "Oh, how much is this Black Sabbath record?" And I'd be like, "It's £2." And she'd empty the coppers out, and she's like, "Oh, I've only got £1 in coppers. I'll be back next week." And she was only like 16, 17.
Oh,
and she'd come back next weekend, right? And she'd have like the rest
this
of the coppers.
This is his after dinner thing, isn't it?
And then she'd come back next week. "I've got the £2, empty it in coppers. Can I get this Black Sabbath record?" "Oh, yeah, yeah. Come the next week. I really want this Kajagoogoo 12-inch single." I'll be like, "Really?"
Black Sabbath and Kajagoogoo?
Yeah. So she had this mad taste in music. Yeah. And she'd essentially only be able to purchase it every couple of weeks with coppers. And then about 6 months
she'd spend
into
hours
this,
going through like sort of yeah. like dipping in the like sort
about six
crates.
Months into this relationship, which was quite bizarre. You meet so many weird and wonderful people in a record shop, right? And she made a purchase of something really weird, like, I don't know, I can't think of it. Darts, the 70s band, right? She bought a 7-inch of something like that.
Or bread.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Chicago.
And she walked out the door and I said, "You must have a kind of record collection now. You know, you must be quite pleased with that." And she ran out the shop so happy with this 7-inch record. She went, "You're right. And all I need now is a record player."
Yeah.
Oh, God.
She was hit by a bus.
No, but like, this that was the highlight of that person's week.
Yeah.
Just speaking to me for a little while.
But our little fella, I can't say that, can I? we had this Malaysian chap who lived he was on X Factor. I'm not going to say his name.
No, probably not. Don't say his name. But there was a guy who...
It's called James Nackerson.
He said his name.
He was on X Factor. But I mean, all you need to know is that once we caught him warming mackerel up on the radiator, and then he used a pan of chocolate for a naan bread with his curry.
The record shop essentially stunk for a good couple of weeks after that. Wait,
radiator grilled mackerel.
He was living in a cupboard out the back. Right, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
We provided that cupboard. Yeah. This was an early food bank.
He came to us and said, "Well, do you need any help with your laptop?"
Yeah.
I was like, "Well, actually, it is a bit slow, but who are you? And what do you want to do with that laptop?"
Weren't you on X Factor last night?
Yeah. So he fixed the laptop, and he was like, "With this relationship started, basically." Mm-hmm. And it ended with him.
You drink 4 litres of coffee a day, then come dressed as a vampire?
Yeah. We used to give him clothes and stuff.
No, we didn't.
I used to give him clothes. And I give him this bag of clothes once of like jeans, jumpers, scarves. Uh-huh.
Vampire outfit.
Vampire outfit from Halloween. Just for, you know, it was in there.
Yeah,
it was kind of got the charity shop.
You wanted him to wear that outfit, Frankie.
He walked pretty much every day, including the wig.
Oh, my word.
I wish we'd done a similar thing. Because the record shop
in Marble,
Frankie might still have the vampire costume if you want to dress
it. Because the record shop in Marple just sells porn now. So it's not even a record shop anymore. It now sells ink cartridges. It's an ink cartridge shop.
Yeah.
There isn't even one.
Natural progression from records. Melted them down. Put them in some cartridges.
So when are your ink cartridges coming?
Yeah. Well, the Dave will openly admit that they probably make more money for coffee than they do for records.
Yeah.
like in a
But you sold record players. Sorry, going back to the
record players. Rare analog synths.
Yeah.
Speakers.
You know the one that's on the last Slug album.
Yeah. Was there a story where a guy dropped off a load of synths that were actually worth a load of money?
A bloke comes in the shop and went like, "Do you buy synths?" And I was like, "I practically don't know how to spell it." But he mentioned something. He said like Moog, and I was like, I know what that is. I know you mean Moog, but like, yeah, I know what that is. And we went over to his house, and it was like, I was like, "Have you been in a band?" And he was like, "Nah, just like Gary Newman." Like, whoa, and he had this just like history of synths,
wall of synths,
Juno 60, Selena Strings Ensemble, all of these mad things. And I was like, "How much do you want for them?" And I said, "Well, this is how much I'm going to give you for them." And I paid like next to nothing.
Yeah.
Left him in tears, but we made a fortune. You know what I mean? Absolute killing.
But that's the kind of thing that keeps the shop going.
But we've had to do that to keep the doors open.
That keeps the shop going for a couple of months.
I've been in the council chamber, and I shouldn't say this, I won't mention any names. Have you seen the feature film Reservoir Dogs?
Yes.
You know when they've got guns and they aim at each other, like the three of them? The we had someone there with a. What?
Mexican standoff.
That's a different film. That's Jason Statham, isn't it? So he's like, they've got the council person with a bill for 30 grand that they wanted to show us. We had, who was the other ones? Was it a lawyer out there or something? But I also had like the Fortnite this because I'd been offered an interview with the Guardian and the Times. They were doing like a big expose, and it was just like Reservoir Dogs. I was Mr. Pink. No, but everyone was like, kind of like, if you keep your mouth shut about this city of culture thing, we'll not enforce this. And I was like, well, if you shut the fuck up, I won't ring Tommy Tuppence from the Telegraph. Like, you know, it was like proper mental. This is like autobiography stuff. Like, you know? But it's not been fun. The real funny part is that nearly killed us.
Yeah, but Dave, what's your autobiography going to be called?
Huh?
What is your autobiography going to be called?
Oh, Set to Stun.
Set in Stone.
Set to Stun. That's it. It's about me when I eventually get in there. You know what I'm doing.
Oh, and it's actually a big year for you as well,
Dave. It is a big year for me.
Is it actually?
Is it 25? Is it
golden?
Silver.
Silver anniversary.
Silver anniversary.
Congratulations.
Oh. 25
years of being masturbatory. fully functioning.
And we actually
is that why you said
we worked out like from like the average milliliter that comes out.
Right? Milliliter?
Yeah. That he could over that time he could have filled like in one of those fuel bowsers that you can pull on the back of a van.
We worked it out.
Jesus.
With his average ratio to milliliters, he could have filled one of those bowsers. I mean, his wife's in the room.
I had to go to the fertility clinic and they call me Lead Tanker.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't think this is going to be a regular feature.
It was like check your ankle, son.
12 feet away.
Yeah. But there's the product of said sperm.
So as far as the future of the shop, though, is it safe? Is it okay?
It's never safe. So I hate it. In a sense, I work like kind of 7 days a week now, and it's shit. I hate it when it's like that, you know? Yeah. But then the darkness comes on and you go, fuck off.
What?
You know? It's really hard. People don't like that. This city's weird. It's the city that's been shit on for 40 years. Everyone's suspicious of everything. Yeah. If you offer them something nice, so we've got Vic Goddard coming up next week to do an exhibition of these fag packer paintings. He's never done it before.
Yeah.
And we go, right, we'll do this. Come up. And he's going to play, Subway Sector, they're going to play like an acoustic set. And people look at that and go, like, yeah, it might be free, but I don't see me getting a blowjob out of this. Do you know what I mean? There's always an issue with people around it. When we did, like, example of Jim's beer gig, he's the hat man. Yep. And he was like, there was people queuing at 4 in the morning. I honestly didn't know who he was at the time.
Yeah.
We charged £5, £2.50 if you were on benefits, and the shit we got. And we'll see you helping people out in the door now. So actually, it's Universal Credit, you burk. But it's like, yeah, actually. Yeah. That fucking problem.
Yeah.
You know?
So I'm surprised that, especially get criticised for
it,
that.
It is a thing around here, like the Sunderland Echo comment section is a special piece of shit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure all your local papers are the same, but I think ours is pretty.
I think politically, Sunderland is really challenging at the moment.
Yeah.
we you know, we've got this amazing record being the first one to get our votes back. You check out the 12th of December. Look out for that. We'll be the first one in.
We did last time.
I believe Newcastle pipped you to the post on that.
Yeah,
but when that's all you do, you know what? That's all you've got. Big and fast counters.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, who wants? Why don't you just not be racist instead?
We're a Labour heritage town, with very vocal Brexit supporting people. Yeah.
I mean, this is how weird pop Brexit is. I ended up on whatever the equivalent of BBC One is in France. I presume it's Le BBC One.
Yeah. Le BBC Un.
Le BBC Un.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Por favor, son. But it's like, I ended up on there. Oh, he's Sean the Bastard. Sean the Bastard.
Hey, Sean.
There he is. We ended up on that. And I was Dave Harper restaurateur. And there, I'll show you the picture in a bit. I've been on that.
I'll have to tweet that.
The next thing you know, the New York Times is, and I'm like, bullshit. Yeah. This is like, and then.
This happened.
My poor, it was no fucking biggie. It's just a big thing. Really, international, really.
No, but I do think there's because of the political landscape we're set against, or Dave's set against here, there's a lot of, like, people looking out for themselves opposed to, you know, like, I don't know, if it's almost like people are scared to have fun in Sunderland, or people are scared for something good to happen
is
at
that,
the minute.
Yeah. Is that a recent thing, or has that been happening?
Well, of course it's a recent thing. No one could spell EU but like 3 years ago around here, do you know what I mean? And it's like, now it's all the rage, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone wants to get out of it. It's absolutely mental. I mean, it's like, I don't mind being called out for it. I know I don't like using the term turkeys voting for Christmas,
but
because turkeys
are.
Don't vote. Yeah. Well, basically, stupid idea.
I mean, there's certainly been, you know, across vast parts of the country, there definitely has been that drip installation of people just thinking they don't deserve a better.
Because people are latently racist. I know it's not the thing to say, but they are.
Yeah.
People are scared of brown people they haven't met.
Yeah.
It's fine. Like, yeah. My dad blamed Brexit on Nigerian women.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, which part of Europe is this in?
How do you find it around here engaging with people about politics, or do you just not?
I do frequently.
Well, you're like-minded people. You don't have to have that conversation.
But if you get into that, you know, with anyone else,
I think personally speaking, it's quite scary sometimes.
Yeah,
it's terrifying given the amount of like announcements
the
we've
rhetoric.
Had. Yeah, that it's apparently Project Fear. I tell you what I've noticed, though, Project, everything's going to be class. It's not really taken off round here, is it?
No.
Mm. Yeah, that's a weird thing. Like,
but there's rationale in their reasoning to a certain extent. The Northeast has been so neglected by central government that,
but
you know,
still
if somebody...
blame our local authority for that. Well,
know,
a lot of people
I know.
Do.
But that's education, you know, isn't it? And there's so many frustrated people, you know. The Northeast was desecrated in the 80s, and it wasn't rich then anyway, right?
Yeah.
So now we have a situation where people are actually being spun a situation where they could actually vote Conservative because they want Brexit done.
Yeah.
Because they have so stronger feelings about the referendum.
Yeah.
But that is such an own goal.
I know,
for everything we were setting out to be. Again, we were brought up... that Maggie Thatcher and the Tories is like you can't even say, it was almost you can't say conservative. You don't say conservative. Did you say conservative?
Yeah.
Kill him. You know what I mean? Like, you know?
Yeah.
And I can understand the rationale of frustration of people just wanting something different, you know? Because Labour's always been the given, the given, was the given. And Labour hasn't changed anything up here.
No. So is this one of the Brexit Party's target areas as well? Can
100%.
You get a sense of that?
100%.
Well?
Nigel Farage started his campaign for his election a couple of miles down the road in County Durham.
Okay.
Yeah. He sees a lot of people disenfranchised and frustrated that the Brexit decision hasn't been followed through. And I think a lot of traditional Labour voters who are sceptical of Jeremy Corbyn, maybe that's because of the right-wing media's perception of him, are just so hell-bent on wanting to be out the EU now.
Yeah.
And you can't even have a rational conversation.
No, well, that's over. That time to argue about the pros and cons of the EU is over because people are so entrenched in their positions.
The biggest employer in Sunderland since the shipyards and the mines closed is Nissan Car Factory.
Yeah.
Now, Nissan have already knocked shifts on the head.
Mm.
They've already said they're not making certain models here.
Yeah.
It, it's such you can see it a mile off. If they go, you know, and Sunderland Football Club, which is also the only bit of fun the people of Sunderland have outside of the, you know, anything else in the city, they're in League One right now and going down rapidly.
Yeah.
If we lose, which is not unforeseeable, for the first time on Tuesday night, Sunderland got beat off Burton Albion, we slipped to 10th in League One, right?
Yeah.
For the first time, I'm a massive Sunderland fan, I thought, wow, I'm genuinely scared for my football club.
Yeah.
If the football club and Nissan weren't going to be here in 5 years, which is a real possibility, we know clubs like Bury, right? And we bought some Bury players, right?
Yeah.
This town, you know, it'd be like the Wild West.
It's such a scary horizon.
Yeah. And it's not that far away, and it's completely possible.
Yeah.
So doesn't that make places like this even more important then?
Absolutely. You know what I mean? It becomes a haven for like-minded people, but also you can get someone from the outside in and just show them, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg of what could happen, you know? Did you enjoy that gig? Yeah, I loved it. You know what? You should have a proper venue, and suddenly you shouldn't have to do gigs at a coffee shop to see your favourite artists.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm speaking on behalf of Dave now because he had to go and serve someone at the counter, right? But this place has had to become a women's fucking refuge, a fucking food bank. Wow. It was a fucking record shop. Yeah. You know what I mean? Not only are these people starved of culture, they're starved of essential services, which a fucking record shop's having to provide.
Yeah.
You know, and wherever we went, we all had this kind of mentality in our head, and we want to preach that Sunderland is an amazing city full of amazing people. Potential is so untapped, but we're so forgotten.
Yeah.
It's so hard. And do you know what? But some perceptions, I've done press days in Japan, and because of bands like Field Music and the Futureheads and the Golden Virgins and Kinnicky and anyone else came before, so I think Sunderland's some kind of artistic left bank, you know what I mean? But only the people here who have authority here realise that, you know, and the people were taught about the rich culture we could have, you know, and we do have. It's just so frustrating, especially working at the coalface, excuse if you want to use a pun, in a place like this, you know?